Greetings and welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. Today, a continuation of our series on meeting the new novices. Today, I have for us Brother Philip, who along with Brother Thaddeus, who we heard last week, is team teaching a course on hedonists and heretics. And whereas Brother Thaddeus is focusing on heresy and the ways in which we miss the mark intellectually, Brother Philip talking a little bit about hedonism, that is, how those who are not living a Christian life can still produce beautiful work. Some of the greatest artists, musicians, and those who are involved in the fine arts, they themselves didn't lead Christian lives, but were able to still communicate, and we can see the fingerprints of God in their work. And so a kind of meditation and exposition of a beauty that the Lord engages us with, always seeking the truth. And here, seeking the truth perhaps in all the quote-unquote wrong places. Now, this is a Monday and Friday series, both in the morning, right after morning Mass, and in the evening again. You're welcome to come. So far, rave reviews, those who are part of the class. I hope they can continue the series, but it's just for June. It's a limited series because they go off and they'll make vows and be at St. Albert's by the end of this month. So a chance to get to know them a little bit in their final month with us. Today, with Brother Philip, wide-ranging conversation, a little bit about his own vocation, his Italian background, how John Henry Newman played a very critical aspect in his life in terms of his writings and in his thought, a little bit about his alma mater, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, and how he was the host of The Bachelorette. You stay, remember that? It's something that I did not know, and you might look for and search for video evidence of this, as he did, The Irish Bachelorette, a very popular kind of show in its own time, and just overall his real preaching, a passion for preaching the gospel. In that sense, he has it on fire for living this Dominican life. So I love talking to the novices. They have that an engagement. It's their first year, and they're so eager to preach for the salvation for souls. And I hope that comes across in our conversation today. So whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many, many blessings as you enjoy today's show. Greetings. Welcome to St. Dominic's Week. This is Father Michael. I am joined once again by one of our fabulous novices. Today, meet the novices, the Brother Philip Gorlames. I don't know why I like to say Gorlames.
Yeah. It's Gerlomas.
Gerlomas, yes, very good.
Yeah. I don't know why we're particular about it.
I don't know. Just Philip. And maybe to start there with the name, as some of the other brothers I mentioned, just the name Brother Philip, you took that as a religious name.
Yes.
Very good, because you're given, or your baptismal name
is Jeffrey.
Is Jeffrey.
Yeah.
And you've taken Brother Philip, or
yes,
at least you put that, you know, it's the process of getting a religious name. Describe that a little bit. Not that we're a particular name, but just
right,
just the process itself.
You know, that's evolved a lot.
Yes.
I know that before the Second Vatican Council, sometimes there were people who would be receiving the habit and the provincial would say their name and that'd be the first time they'd be hearing it.
Yeah.
Right?
And isn't that wild?
That is hard to imagine.
It really is. It's just like, I think there was a progression of, you just show up and they give you a name. It's just like they, I don't know, took it out of a hat or something.
Right.
But then there was a process of you, because some of the fathers, like Father Felix and others, talk about submitting three names.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And then you give them kind of a terna of things. And
right.
And then they look at it and then they choose one. Or they could choose one of those or just choose a totally different name. And so can you imagine?
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You could have been Brother, you know, Eusebius.
Yeah, right.
You know.
And I know that at least one of my brothers did some version of the three names, right?
Really? Where
some will try that even now.
Oh,
they'll
okay,
narrow it down. They like that idea that it's, there's something of it that's out of your hands. But I chose Philip.
Wait, who did that? Now this is who did that?
Brother Comary.
Did he really?
He had two other alternate names that were in the hopper that Father Mark could have given him.
And he left it not to Father Anthony, but to Father Mark.
I believe it was Father Mark who had the final call. Now, they were all variations. I mean, his name now is Coa Mary.
Yeah.
Right. And so the other two were Coa and another.
Oh, I'm going to have to ask him. So yeah. Very good. Oh, very good. Oh,
right.
Very good. I know we're gonna sit down there. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Good knowledge. Oh, that's interesting. So he did that. And the idea then is that God calls us by name.
Right.
And that name is something that's given to us. And ultimately, I love in the book of Revelation there's a part talking about the stone. And of course, this is very rich symbolic language, but the image is that there's this stone that each of us is given, and underneath the stone is the unique name that God has given us. It's almost like, if you will, a kind of verbal or a kind of vocational fingerprint
right.
that is unique to each one of us. And so religious life, in a sense, particularly symbolizes this or connects with that in the name. First of all, choose our name before we, you know, choose God, God chooses us. And so that sense of being named is part of the practice. And so in terms of your own particular Brother Philip, kind of putting that forth and being named Brother Philip, what was the inspiration behind that?
Right. I have a great devotion to Cardinal John Henry Newman.
Oh, okay.
Who's the beginning of it.
Yeah.
His writings have inspired me.
Uh-huh.
And when I was first out of college and kind of trying to find my way in the world, I was going to a parish in London that was part of the Anglican Ordinariate, and they have a special connection to him.
He
obviously was an Anglican convert to the Catholic Church. And then I started working in the higher education world, and he is the Catholic higher education world.
Yeah.
He is sort of the Magna Carta
yes.
there.
He is the paradigm.
Yeah. So
Newman Centers.
Newman Centers, right. The idea of a university, everything.
Yeah.
So he's so much a part of that world. But then he was part of a religious community. He was an Oratorian, and it's amazing so much in his writings how much his devotion to St. Philip Neri comes through.
Oh, nice.
Especially once I moved to Washington and I started going to a parish that was run by an Oratorian community, that was my first encounter with St. Philip directly, not just mediated through Cardinal Newman. And what I found in him was an example both of things that I value in my life and that I think are fitting to why I would have the name, and also things I want to aspire to.
Nice.
So I look at a lot of the influences on me. It's not only that parish I went in London and the parish where I went in Washington being sort of connected to St. Philip that way.
Yeah.
But I look at how the Knights of Columbus have been a big influence on me. St. Philip was an early promoter of what today we would call the universal call to holiness.
Interesting. And, you know, and just give us a brief biography of Philip Neri.
St. Philip was born in Florence in the early part of the 16th century.
Okay.
His parents were partisans of a reform movement within the church that he was sympathetic to. And so he had this idea that he was going to be a hermit and then a missionary. And he said those were dramatically different.
I'm going to be a hermit missionary.
Couldn't quite make up his mind.
I love it.
But this was obviously a time of great corruption in the church, right?
Yes.
At the very beginning of the Reformation.
Yes.
So he goes to Rome.
Yeah.
He says he's going to go and pray in the catacombs, just try to get back to the earliest days of the church.
Yeah.
And after a while, he has a series of really profound experiences of prayer and says, I want to get out and start this process of conversion for other people. And using his sort of disarming sense of humor and love of the arts, he's able to gather together a community of people in Rome who start living a more intentional sort of Christian life while maintaining whatever their commitments are in the world. It's a beautiful image of how reform happens.
Yes.
Because sometimes we look at the problems in the church or in our society or things like that. We think that there's going to be one proclamation or policy change that's St. Philip had a vision of how you can really begin those processes from the ground up.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, and that's even today, you know, you look at the church and, you know, there's definitely dark clouds of scandal. There's a sense in which, in terms of organization or hierarchical kind of things, we always need that sense of reform. And as you say, Philip gives us a sense that it's not enough to just have all the policies or kind of agenda coming from the top down. That human nature doesn't really work that way, honestly.
Yes.
I mean, certainly that can be kind of guardrails to basically keep, overt offense from happening. But it's never rules and regulations that actually form virtue.
Right.
More than community, context, culture, and a sense of formation that really lives it. And so the oratory is a kind of a formative movement in that Catholic Reformation or the Catholic response to the Reformation.
Yes. Yeah. And so there's that connection.
Yeah.
And one of the means he used was sacred art and music and the choir I sang in college, and subsequently those were important parts of my own formation. Right.
Palestrina
was an oratorian.
It was an oratorian, the beautiful sacred music.
Edward Elgar had a connection
oh, really?
To the oratory as well.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, so did J.R.R. Tolkien.
Really?
Yeah.
In the oratory?
Yes. He was educated by the oratory in Birmingham. Okay. He wasn't a member of it.
I was just going to say,
He had a wife and kids. And,
yeah.
And Elgar did, too.
Yeah.
But
influenced by the oratory.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Wow, so I didn't know, so you've got this connection kind of with the oratory, Philip, and through Henry Newman, through...
Right,
Newman. Yeah. So you said Philip is kind of that call.
Yes, and he's also from our neck of the woods, so to speak. You know, my family mostly came from various parts of northern Italy. He's from Florence, and I like that connection, too.
Nice. No, and speaking maybe of family, just to step back in your own vocation.
Right.
You're from, in terms of neck of the woods, up in the beautiful wine country.
Yes.
You're from Napa?
Napa Valley, born and raised.
Oh, very good.
Yes. So I'm the local of my novice class.
There you go. That's right. Have you guys gone wine tasting yet?
We have.
Have you really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Oh, so was that was in the fall?
That was at Sebastiani.
Okay. With Father Anthony's sister.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Oh, very good.
Yeah.
That's right. To give it, I love how, and this is to... speaks to the formation of the novice year. There's certainly the things we think about in terms of developing, obviously, a prayer life. There's the growth in study, a sense of community. But then there's just like human formation.
Right.
That's part of the day. And part of that is I had a laugh. I just happened to be passing by the refectory where we eat, where Father Anthony was sitting with you guys on like table etiquette.
Yes.
I'm like, how to eat.
It's just basic.
Basic kind of like table etiquette.
How to be a part of a society.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he takes you wine tasting so that you just have a sense of how to handle yourself and, you know, in a more formal kind of convivial setting, you know, thing. That's just these are life, you know, experience that you know, if you're coming right out of college and used to, you know, eating ramen and
there's a transition that needs to be made there.
You need to be able to be able, as St. Paul says, be all things to all people. So I love that aspect of the novitiate, just life formation, human formation.
And on top of that, I think that it ties back to some really beautiful ideas from the Dominican spiritual tradition. Mm. We look at the created world as something good, and our relationship with it as part of how we encounter God. Processes like winemaking, entertaining.
Yeah,
I think that is certainly it was formative in my life, giving me a sense of the Catholic sacramental vision.
Yeah,
and I think that those are important things to have as part of a really truly Dominican process of formation.
The goodness of creation.
Yes.
The combination between nature and grace that Aquinas talks about, you know, that sort of thing. Now, so you're from that, but in terms of family life, you're the...
I am the first of two.
Okay, yeah. And Catholic family upbringing?
Yeah, so I think we were pretty typical Catholic family. Okay. I always like to say we weren't... We're not the most dotted I's and crossed T's devout group of people. But, we went to church. We recognized that was an important part of our life.
Okay.
We were very loyal. I think that was the important thing.
Okay.
I think we had a life that was animated by the Catholic imagination.
Gotcha.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
And Catholic schools are the closest thing we have to a family business.
Okay, very good. Okay, all right. Exactly.
So my sister and I were fourth generation at our Catholic grade school, John the Baptist in downtown Napa.
Sure, yeah.
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 And then we were second generation at Justin Siena High School.
Okay,
My mother still works.
Oh, really? Okay.
My mother works there in the business office. My sister is a Catholic grade school teacher. She was here at Demeriac Academy in San Francisco for a few years.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And now she's at Edward the Confessor.
Okay.
And Dana Point.
Okay.
So there is that's what
it's a family, but that's what
that's
you
what do. We do. It's too bad we didn't have a family business that involved better income
there
potential.
You go. Well, formation is good. Now, in your own in terms of your own vocation, of course, Catholic, you know, schooling, and of course, for college, you had to go to a somewhat Catholic college.
Yeah. I've got to tease.
Right.
You went to the
University of Notre Dame.
There you go.
Yes.
Fighting Irish. There you go.
Right.
So for us, that was always the crown jewel,
Course.
It was the brass ring.
Of course.
We didn't have any family members who went, even though there are a lot of legacy students at Notre Dame. But my father and my uncles and my grandfathers, they always grew up, that was their team.
Yep, of course.
So,
no football and to maybe a lesser extent basketball, but the sports.
Right.
The intercollegiate.
Oh, because my father at least certainly remembered the Digger Phelps years.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So that going and visiting was as much for them as it was for me at the beginning.
Yeah. But then you got connected.
Once I got there, it was just such an incredible experience. And what a place to be during that period in my life.
Yeah.
I think that it's part of, I think it's so much of the trajectory I ended up on, not only saying like, not only do I really want to be a good disciple and all that stuff and everything, it's like, I really recognize how much a good Catholic education can make a difference in somebody's live.
Sure, that formation.
Right.
And what did you study at Notre Dame?
I double majored in film.
Oh.
And in history.
Wow.
So either way.
Either way, you're going to be employed.
Yeah. I mean, lots of marketable skills.
Film. Now, yeah.
I started off thinking the film thing was going to be my main focus when you're 17 and idealistic.
Of course.
You're like, I'm going to be an incredible filmmaker.
Exactly.
And do
all
this stuff.
Yeah.
What I realized once I got there is that the part of studying film that I enjoyed a lot more was the critical theoretical side of what it means to tell a story and how a narrative works. And that
kind
ended
of the
up
philosophy
having,
of film.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had really interesting implications for a lot of the topics that were interesting to me in history.
Okay.
So I was able to explore more. I did my master's program in comparative politics.
Okay.
Trying to integrate those two disciplines.
Yeah, say more about that.
Yeah, so immediately after I graduated from Notre Dame, I went and did that master's program at the London School of Economics, and my focus was in nationalism. I find the 19th century in particular a really interesting period because it's got a lot of pictures.
Okay.
A lot of music and flags and things like that that'll keep your attention. What I was trying to understand more is the way in which we can use the theoretical framework and literature from entertainment and the study of things like that and look at how we study political phenomena that way.
Nice.
Sometimes it feels a little cynical, but I think it's an important part of understanding how anything works in a mass media sort of environment.
What would you say was a takeaway from that, in terms of a principle of truth that you learned through that kind of experience?
I think one of the important takeaways for me is that there's nothing new under the sun.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Ecclesiastes, baby.
Yeah, right. And I think that that's important for us to remember that we always have the sense that we're living in the age where we finally figured things out.
Sure.
And now if we can just get everybody to move along,
get on board,
we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
But what's so funny is when you look back at periods of time in the past where people said, this is it. This is progress. We're going to fix things. And then 100 years later, people are like, what were those people thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
That's
interesting.
I think it inspires a lot of self-reflection.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, that's true. And in terms of your connection then, in terms of self-reflection with becoming aware of and perhaps investigating the Dominican order, what did that trajectory look like?
Right. There were Dominican sisters at Justin Siena when I was there.
Oh, really? What congregation?
They were from San Rafael.
Oh, okay. Yeah. San Rafael.
Not very many of them.
Okay.
Yeah, but they were there.
Are they still there today?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I think there's a few on the board.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. Then... So I always had this awareness, especially as a great big nerd, who was all mixed up in European history and things like that, what Dominicans are and what they were about.
Yeah.
Right. I never made a personal connection in terms of, maybe I should be a Dominican.
Okay. But from the historical aspect, you were familiar with it. That's interesting because most people I would say the majority of people who even have Dominican vocations didn't come at it from a historical angle.
Right.
Right? They came at it more experientially, either knew a Dominican or read Thomas Aquinas or the theological, but a historical vantage point. Say more about that. That's actually intriguing.
And right. So I always remember learning about Thomas Aquinas and Albert the Great, Catherine of Siena, obviously. So they would come up in class and their ideas would sort of percolate around. And, I think I get what Dominicans are about. Mm-hmm. And when you're at Notre Dame, you know, having an interest in religious life is so perfectly normal. It would be like saying, I'm thinking of going to law school.
Yeah.
Right? So there are all kinds of people around. Like, well, I think I might be a Dominican. I think I'm.
Gotcha.
So. There are.
Is there a Dominican culture there? I mean, in the sense of, are there? There's no Dominicans at Notre Dame, are there?
Well, there are Dominican graduate students.
Oh, sure, of course, of course.
Well, there's going to be one fewer in the fall
because
the one from our province, finished his PhD.
That's right.
There are. There's a house of Dominican friars who live in South Bend and study there, and then Father Gustavo Gutierrez has been on the faculty there for a long time.
Okay.
I think he's from the Toulouse province or.
Yeah,
He's not from the Latin American.
No, he
has an interesting situation.
It's an interesting kind of thing. Yeah. But yeah, no. So no, and we've had Father Raphael on the podcast before. We had a debate on whose angel was better, Mice. So
was it Michael
Raphael and we had Father Gabriel. We had a debate. We did. For listeners, if you haven't heard the debate, it's actually one of the most commented on podcasts where we all took each other. And here's the thing about that. The backstory was. I pitched the idea and we were going to do it. They came with real, like, they came loaded.
Prepared.
Yes, they came prepared. They came more prepared than I was expecting.
Yeah.
So it made for a really fun podcast. All of a sudden, I found myself like, oh boy, I've got to put out some real arguments here.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a hook to get a conversation going. It turned out that
right, not with that crowd.
Not with that crowd. No, exactly. You don't, and I should have known that, obviously. I get some academics or at least academically inclined guys in the room.
Yeah.
They're
going
to take me seriously. So, yeah. So did you know Ray Filmeri when you were there?
You know, I know who he was.
Okay.
It was one of those things that's funny. A lot of people, when they look at a Notre Dame game on TV,
yeah.
they think, like, wow, okay, that's a lot of students there. I don't think they have a concept of how small the student body is.
Yes.
So when you're looking at that student section, that's pretty much every student.
Wow.
And so when everybody's wearing a Kelly Green t-shirt, except for one giant in a white habit.
Yeah, it stands out.
Yeah,
you stand out.
So I know who he was.
Yeah.
We didn't interact much.
Okay.
I think that, you know, I had my focus elsewhere. And I think there was a part of me.
I like how you handled that. I had my focus elsewhere. Keep going.
I think there was a part of me, even though I was interested in religious life at that time, I think, like, well, the Dominicans are too obvious.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that just seems there's I think one of the challenges for my generation is we have this need to be special, right?
And so
we want to dig for the joke is always, well, I'm looking at this other order. You probably haven't heard of it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That would be sort of
my designer religious life kind of thing.
Right. So when I was in grad school in London, I went with a group of friends to Rome for Easter.
Okay.
And we were going around to different churches on Holy Thursday, as is a tradition.
Tradition?
St. Philip, actually, originated.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, did he? Oh.
And when we walked into Santa Maria Sopra Minerva, where St. Catherine is buried, there was a friar walking along with hood and cap on and the candlelight. And I just remember looking at him as soon as we walked in the church and thinking, very simply, like, oh, I wonder if I could do that.
Really?
And I mentioned it to a few friends over the course of the next few weeks and months. And to them, it seemed totally obvious. They're like, well, yeah.
You, really?
Of course you should be a Dominican. This,
really?
That works out with what your spirituality is like, with what your interests are, all of the, you know, the community life thing would make sense for you.
Yeah.
I just found it odd that you didn't say anything.
Really?
But I figured you had a plan. That was usually what they...
Wow.
Right.
So it's interesting that you kind of threw it out there and that confirmation came back really strong.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but at that point, I had no contact with the province.
Sure.
I just had an idea, like, well, there are Dominicans,
and you're in London,
and I'm in London at this point. I would move to Washington D.C. for work a few months later.
Okay.
But after a while there, I said, well, I suppose there are Dominicans on the West Coast.
Okay. Yeah.
So I went and used the old Google to
to
confirm that.
Nice.
Sure enough, right?
Nice.
And that was more or less my process.
Process. So it wasn't necessarily meeting any particular friar here in the province, more than kind of the historical, intellectual life of the order itself.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You get it. Now, how's this been year? So this is a unique year.
Right.
The novitiate year. You obviously have lived abroad. You've certainly lived a little yourself in terms of in terms of age, are you one of the
I'm toward the middle,
You're toward
actually.
The middle. Are you? Okay.
Yeah. So I might be on the older end.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just a bit, but how has been kind of the novitiate experience, where you have a range of ages, so to speak? How's that been? Anything surprise you? Anything stand out for you or strike you?
One of the things that I find delightful about it, actually, is that you get the sense that we're all starting from the same place in terms of religious life, but there's a part of us that's always going to be, we're bringing the experience of where we were the day before we entered, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I look at the guys in our class who are fresh out of college.
Yes.
And think, it actually makes me feel younger almost.
Oh,
right? It reminds
me
of what that experience is.
Yeah.
And then I look at the guys who are older than me, especially Brother Luke Maria, who had a whole career and everything like that. And I think, well, that gives me a lot more perspective on life, right? That there is, when I'm, all the things that worry me when I'm 26 are not necessarily the end of the world.
Yeah.
There's a whole other...
This too will pass.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
like,
right.
Life will keep going.
Right. And so I think you're able to bring both the wisdom of experience and the exuberance of youth into a really exciting kind of combination when you have people entering from different stages of their lives.
And I love that too, because I know for myself, just the privilege of living and pleasure living with the novitiate, because we could be anywhere. I happen to be here in the novitiate.
Right.
It's... Every year, there's a new crew, so to speak, a new,
right.
a new class, and every class is obviously different, But those ideas of this life is worth living radiates or is communicated in unique ways, in a way that can't but help animate my own religious experience. Like, you know, lest I ever forget or become routine or take for granted, yeah, this life is worth living. Like so from someone who's lived,
that's gotta be exciting,
you know, so someone who's had a career and they're like, I've given up this career for this, and I think, yeah, this life is worth living. Someone's coming right out of college and they're just like, we're changing the world, you know, we're gonna preach the salvation of souls, yeah. And I'm like, you're darn right. Yeah, this is what we're doing. So it's kind of like, as you say, that the just the being in the present, you might obviously just coming in and having this experience from you, but it's almost like that experience of appreciating the kind of the full spectrum of the class in this particular year is what I would say is something that I've experienced as well. Just every year being like, wow, there's an enthusiasm, a love for the life that I don't want to ever, hopefully, in my own priesthood or this life, lose connection with.
Right.
Because to be reminded of, why did I enter in the first place? What's this all about? You know, don't let the fact that, you know, as the years go, as I've been a priest now for 11 years, it's kind of like, oh my goodness, you know, I let me not lose that first fervor when I was, you know, just ordained, you know, that kind of thing.
So,
the novitiate is a powerful experience of that. Are there things in terms of your own vocation you asked yourself in terms of God leading you that you feel confirmed in
more
deeply now?
What I find especially interesting are the ways in which you discuss, and I think you talk about this because you're on the admissions board. There is a tension between what you think are going to be the things you like.
Yes.
And what you think are going to be the things you hate.
Yes.
And then what the reality is.
Yes, it's true.
Right?
It's true.
So there's a part of me, we like the Myers-Briggs spectrum a lot. I've discovered it in our community. And so I know I'm a, it has its limitations, but it's useful sometimes. I'm a big time J.
Yeah.
On the scale, right? I want a plan. I want an order to things, and I figured, well, obedience would be good for that, right? and then I just had in my mind this idea that, well, if there's obedience, then we'll just, you know, we'll have a plan for things. It'll all be worked out. Everybody will hop to it.
And exactly. It'll be very ordered, very structured. Right. Everyone knows their place. There's a plan for everything.
Yeah.
Welcome to the reality.
I wrote to a friend recently, I think part of obedience is one of the real virtues of it is just learning to accept life where you don't know what's going on.
Exactly. you're not in charge of the schedule.
No.
You've got absolutely no control in the novitiate.
Right.
You are not master of your own day.
Right.
and being okay with that and letting the Lord lead in that way.
And at the other end, I think there are things that you come in kind of anxious about.
Sure.
I think that I'm a big time extrovert, as everyone in the community has
had the pleasure to
learn.
Experience. You gotta have some pleasure, and you are. I would say most religious Dominican religious are not naturally extroverted.
No,
So you'll
stand out.
You'll stand out. So you and Brother Dave, and a few there are a few of you that definitely stands out. So
so the idea that this is also an active contemplative community. Right?
Yeah.
We're not just out in active ministry.
Yeah.
We're very intentional about silence, which my class is not good at.
No.
And
times
for common prayer and that kind of deliberative life. I was thinking, I don't know if I can handle that. I actually really value that.
Do you? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think for the first time, I do not have a monastic vocation, and I probably shouldn't go run off to some monastery. So for the first time in my life, I can actually look at that and say, I get that.
Yeah.
I understand why that brings life to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And it's interesting you mentioned just from that time, extrovert, introvert, those are certainly personality types. They're not good or bad, right? They're just a way of interacting with the world.
Right.
But the contemplative life is usually finds a more natural, on a natural scale, fit with someone who's more, you know, naturally seeks energy in kind of downtime and reflection. For extrovertish, as I understand it, is that sense of seeking energy when you're in that process of engagement with others. How does that work when you have, well, first of all, maybe two questions. The other extrovert in your class, you guys butt heads, is that more of a...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you butt heads? Okay, yeah.
I think the potential's there.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
No,
so you got to. So that's a whole different dynamic you got to kind of work out.
There's that you have to work with. And I think you also have to have a certain healthy sense of what you're asking from the the less outgoing members.
That's my other question. How does it work when someone's a little more kind of reticent to basically put themselves out there?
Right. I think that it's one of those things where everybody has to be patient with each other.
Yeah,
right.
It's like a family.
I wish that there were a formula to how you can maintain healthy relationships with people in your community who have a different style as far as that goes than what you do. But a lot of it is the process of learning by accident.
Yeah.
There's a restaurant in Yountville. This is a very Napa Valley metaphor for.
I won't tell anyone. You already get teased enough for being a little Napa Valley-ish.
Yeah.
There's between us and everyone listening.
Right. There's a place in Yountville where they have a really an octopus dish that's really popular, right? Okay. But octopus can be tough because it's just all one big muscle.
Yeah.
So what they do to tenderize the octopus is they kind of roll it around in a makeshift washing machine with a bunch of rocks.
Oh, really?
Right. And I think that's what the novitiate's like. Sometimes.
We're all
it'd be nice if you could just reason the octopus into being tender, but the fact is that you gotta roll around.
By the time you get to vows, you're tenderized calamari. I wouldn't share that with your novice brother. Yeah,
that's exactly the kind of thing that
that's great. And but especially for you, what can you obviously joining the order now, living the novitiate, preaching for the salvation of the souls is kind of obviously one of our mottos, or at least that the driving influence. But also that search for truth. And I'm wondering, in your own sense of where God might be calling you, or what interest in as you see the ministerial. Variety in the order. What kind of resonates with you? Where can you see yourself being called to as you continue your Dominican life?
I am really excited to be a part of a community that is involved in academic life. We have our school in Berkeley. We have our involvement with the various other Dominican centers of higher learning around the world.
Sure.
But what's particularly exciting as far as our engagement with the intellectual life goes, especially with the creation of this new Office of Evangelization on the provincial level, is that we have this sense that we're going to take the fruits of that intellectual enterprise to share the fruits of our contemplation,
exactly.
as St. Thomas says.
Yeah.
And we're going to share that outside of the seminar rooms and the lecture halls.
Yeah.
I think that was probably what I was the most hungry for when I was moving from the professional world into religious life is I had this great interest in higher education because I thought that's had to be the fullest realization of the intellectual life.
Sure.
What we learn so often, though, is that higher education is as much a business as it is about the pursuit of truth. And it's very easy to slip into sort of elitist mindset, especially when you're using a restaurant in Yountville as a metaphor for religious life.
Yeah.
Right? So I clearly have that temptation. It's easy to start looking at education as something that confers some sort of righteousness or virtue.
Superiority, right?
Right.
I know something, so I'm better than you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I really appreciate being a part of a community that recognizes that the truth is something we've got to share.
Yes.
It's a fire that we've got to go and spread all
that's
around because everybody deserves that.
That's right.
And I think that's the church at her best,
and
the Dominican Order in particular, I think, is a realization of this, is it does that all the time. Mm-hmm. I think you look at our church here at St. Dominic's,
just
the physical building.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of great art galleries in San Francisco that you'd have to pay through the nose to go and enter and things like that. You can walk in here any time of day you want.
Exactly.
And you can see just as much beauty and splendor as you would in any of those places. And I think I feel the same way about our intellectual tradition.
Nice. And so in terms of like living that life, I'm always astounded by, and I shouldn't be, but how the church herself, that is the physical building of St. Dominic's here, is a magnet for people of curiosity who are seeking, who are just in beauty. And I know some of your own interests and talents skew along kind of like music and art and that sort of thing. Could you see yourself using that kind of a...
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, we have these novice sort of preaching exercises, right? We tell our vocation stories.
Yeah.
We've spoken at Vespers a few times.
Yeah.
And then a few of us gave reflections at the New Year's Vigil. Every time you realize, in the same way that a professor might have a PowerPoint slide, you have all the illustrations you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So I remember on New Year's Eve talking about Mary at the foot of the cross and her relationship to the sacrifice of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny we call that the sacrifice of Isaac, because Isaac didn't actually get sacrificed.
Yeah, he doesn't actually die.
But thinking about that story, it's amazing when you stand in the pulpit here at St. Dominic's,
yeah.
And you look over, well, there's a Pietà right there.
Yeah.
When we think about Mary.
And you point,
here.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
People can't see me pointing, but that's
right. You can, you actually have demonstrated kinds of,
right.
Ways to point.
I think there's something really lovely about that. And, coming from a musical background, I think into a more serious approach to my faith, right?
Yeah.
Instead of the other way around,
yes.
It's like, oh, I want to be a Christian, I'm going to start getting involved more with church. Instead of for me, it's like, I really like church, I should probably work on being a Christian.
Yeah.
I think that there is, I've experienced the power of the church's musical tradition,
yeah.
As well, so profoundly in my own life. It's one of the things that I love here. Not just what we do liturgically on
sure.
Sundays, which is beautiful enough, but I've already seen in my family and people who have come to visit the fact that the friars sing the office together in the morning and the evening each day. It's itself so profound.
Yes. No, it's funny because you think of different cultures and way of ecology, how music shapes culture.
Yeah.
Right? And that there, even amongst sometimes, clubs or sports teams, even in kind of in Europe and other places, they'll have like theme songs, right? Or they'll have something that binds you. And it's music plays a part of that chemistry that brings you together, right? That gives you a sense of identity,
yes.
And shape. And so,
well, if you've ever been to a Notre Dame game, that's certainly
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly, right? Chants and calls, yeah. and things like that is just part of the fabric. And we have our own, tradition goes back obviously through the Psalms of David, our Jewish roots.
Right.
Yeah, that give us that sense of continuity through music, through chant, through beauty, and it's empowering, right? It brings the spirit alive. So in the Dominicans, we have our own Fra Angelico and others that contributed to that sense of the arts and the beauty, for sure, in every way. Here's the last section for us. Fun fact: I've been asking all of our novice brethren something that someone who maybe a few folks know, but who wouldn't necessarily know something about you, an experience or something about you that's kind of a fun fact.
Right, right. So my classmates make fun of some of my highbrow, tastes.
Your pinky's extended right now,
yeah.
As you're talking.
I just to give a sense, I have some lowbrow.
Okay, yes,
sympathies.
So, nice,
well.
Give me some lowbrow. I love it. All
so
right.
My senior year in college,
yeah.
Our student television station produced and I hosted,
yeah.
a our own Notre Dame version of The Bachelorette.
Oh, really?
It was a real. It was quite the social experiment.
I did. So
I,
you were the host, or you?
I was. I was
really?
The Chris, I think, is the name of the guy Chris? Who hosts the show on ABC, right?
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, and so he'll have the interview with the woman afterwards. What would you think of how your interaction was with Kevin earlier in the day?
Yeah.
She said, I don't know. I've been looking for more of him. Like, okay, well, you have some hard decisions to make.
I've never seen the show, but
but
you're bringing it to life.
And
for
then
me.
Every episode ends with the distribution of roses, right? She'll take a rose and she'll pin it on his lapel. For us, we had her distribute a series of.
Just to be clear. If the winner gets a rose, or the winner for that
if you've
that
been
show,
retained until the next week,
gotcha.
She'll eliminate a few guys.
So you get like eight guys every time you get like six roses, and then it whittles down.
Right.
Okay.
And,
okay. So then, so instead of roses, what was?
Well, we distributed leprechaun hats. So they'd all be dressed in suits and everything.
Nice.
And then she'd stand there with a stack of hats.
Yeah, yeah.
She'd put a little leprechaun hat on them, and then she'd
nice.
And then finally, there'd be one guy who didn't get a hat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the last hat tonight.
Oh,
Patrick. It's time to say your goodbyes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was.
That's it. What was it called?
It was called The Irish Bachelorette.
Oh, The Irish Bachelorette.
For a while, it was still archived on the student television station's website.
I was gonna say, is there video evidence?
Yeah.
Of
I know that there was an
of
issue
a young
with
Jeffrey. Hosting the Irish Bachelorette. I've got to find this.
I'm sure there's video evidence somewhere that I know there was. They've been transferring
password
servers
the,
and things like that.
No,
but
it's not lost.
This,
Notre Dame archive somewhere.
It's somewhere.
Oh,
I think it's.
Gosh.
I hopefully it won't take an archaeologist to find it, but I. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna Google it almost immediately after we end this.
Well, I know there's at least something because we had local news who were interested.
Really?
Then the best part is that people started interacting on Twitter and the social networks
Certain
and things like that. So in the same way that people watching a regular reality television show where they would have
get
like,
into it.
Yeah,
opinions.
Like, right. Oh, I hate that one. Oh,
yeah,
I love that guy. I hope he wins.
Nice.
You know, so hardly anybody watches student television anyway.
Okay, sure.
But this was the one time we really caught people's interest. We had no way of measuring how many views were on traditional television sets because there aren't many Nielsen houses on a college campus.
Sure.
But we could measure people using our online streaming service.
And what did you get a big bump?
We had a not only a big bump, but the best part was that we got a world map that put a little dot. Where your views were coming
from.
Right, so most of the dots were in South Bend.
Sure, of course, because everyone's interested about the particular people.
And then we started, incidental knots, dots across the U.S. Like, okay, well, hometowns, things like that.
Yeah.
What was really fascinating was that some of the biggest dots
we
noticed were in London, Dublin, Santiago, Hong Kong. And we were like, what's going on? Oh, those are study abroad programs. There are
the Notre Dame exchange programs.
Yes, there are all these undergraduates.
Yeah.
This was their way of tying back into what was going on on campus. Yeah.
Wow, very good. So host of show. Do your other brethren know this about you?
I don't know.
If they soon will.
I'm sure at some point I've mentioned it. I really haven't had the money. There are so few quiet moments.
Yes,
I'm sure I've told most stories by now.
No, that's a great one. So good. Well, as you continue, certainly your call from the Lord, we certainly will keep you in prayers as going forward. It's certainly, as with all the novices, I really do treasure the fact that my assignment here is at the novitiate, and so prayers for you going forward, and certainly keep us in St. Dominic's in the ministry and prayer as you continue to respond to the Lord's call. And I hope for all those listening, this was certainly a moment when the Lord touched your heart in His way, and may all that you do truly radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.